American Soccer Show on World Football Day.
Liga MX final is upon us, and Club America is looking for a rare back-to-back title run, the first since Pumas did it in 2004. Meanwhile, León will work towards its second title since 1957. Should America win, they'll pick up a 12th overall title that'll put them above hated rivals Chivas. Speaking of which, Chivas fans try to bolster the team's economy and signings after Jorge Vergara underwhelms as they try to build back towards being an important team in Mexico. Meanwhile, in Brazil, El Tri gets a tough but manageable group. Can they move past it for the sixth World Cup in a row? All this and more on this week's episode of the Mexican Soccer Show. My name is Eric Gomez, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Marshall, who right now is suffering alongside Manchester United in his native England. How you doing there, Tom?
Not bad, Eric, not bad. Bit cold, but all good.
Yeah, that's what happens when you leave 80-degree Guadalajara. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's fine. I'll just go to Manchester where it's like negative 300 or something. Yeah, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Nayib Moran also in Europe, as he has been for the past few months, in Madrid, España. How you doing, Nayib?
Bien, Eric. Johnny, hey, Tom. Everything's well over here. Tomorrow, Diego Reyes and Hector Herrera visit me, I think, in Calderon, and we'll see what we can hear from the players. I mean, Reyes scored his first goal with Porto B, and Herrera could have good minutes because Lucho Gonzalez is injured. So probably as long as Herrera doesn't get a red card in the first 10 seconds of the game, but,
right,
you know, we want to see him get good minutes and see if, you know, he has learned new techniques in the European football.
Finally, on this side of the Atlantic Ocean, Johnny Rico, San Diego or TJ today?
Right now, San Diego, Tijuana later on tonight.
All right, so he's doing double duty. Not a lot of you guys have that opportunity. I'm just going to step over to a different country later today. What up? So that's Johnny Rico. And myself, I'm in Mexico City right now where it's nice and sunny. The city is weird, you know. August, it'll be cold and rainy, and you'll walk out on a December morning, and it'll be just like 68 degrees and sunny. So there's that. And speaking of which, here in Mexico City, this Sunday, a new champion will be crowned for the Liga Bancomer MX.
I wouldn't say Leo. New. I wouldn't say new. It's going to be a repeat.
Well, okay. I mean, still, like, I'm looking towards that as well. But it is a different tournament, so yeah, that's fine. We can go with that. So yeah, as Johnny casually mentioned, it's either Club America with back-to-back titles, title number 12, as I mentioned at the top of the show, or León with their sixth title, but only their second. I said first at the top of the show. I meant their second title since 1956. So not, you know, not a team that has had a lot of success recently. They did beat Cruz Azul back in 1997. Or rather, they lost to Cruz Azul. That was their last title. And, yeah, not a lot of success for these guys. But they've got a very competitive team, just tons of offense. Uruguayan coach Gustavo Matosa is really pulling that group together after a dismal Clausura 2013. They were knocked out of the Libertadores. I do believe that if they win the title this year or this tournament, they won't be in the 2014 Copa Libertadores. Is that right?
No, they'll participate. The León is going to be participating in the 2014/15 CONCACAF Champions League.
Okay, so they still have a chance to play both tournaments, right?
Played in Libertadores come January.
Okay, so good opportunity for them, even after they crashed out 12 months ago with big stars such as Nery Castillo. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. And, I found this to be very interesting, guys. A lot of the media down here in Mexico, and I know that there's always been like this really, really marked line between press that are in favor of America, even those of us who exist outside of Televisa and look upon America favorably, would think that this is a very tough series. But still, you know, you get the vast majority of journalists saying that León are the favorites. Do you guys agree with that?
I'd say that I think Leon are the form team. I honestly, personally, I can't split them, but I'd say Leon are the form team because of over the playoffs, I think they've been pretty superb. I mean, obviously not without any problems at all. I mean, I think the goalkeepers coming out for crosses could be big, especially, you know, we saw America score 2 goals from set pieces the other day against Toluca to win 2-0. So, but I mean, in terms of who's playing best at the minute, I think it's Leon. I mean, they've scored, what is it, 17 goals in the last 5 games. So, you know, they're averaging over 3 a game. Over the playoffs, but they're playing really nice football, and they dealt with Santos Laguna, who, you know, a lot of people's favourites there as well, dealt with them really well. America, I've not been, I don't know, I've kind of on both hands, I've been not been in, too impressed in terms of the quality of play, but on the other hand, I've been highly impressed with the kind of maturity that the team's shown and the way that the team's doing exactly what manager Miguel Herrera, it's almost exactly in his mould now, the team. And we saw that against Toluca. I mean, the way they managed that game in the second leg, coming from a 2-1 defeat, I thought was exceptional. You know, a really nice balance between, you know, going for a goal, but not overcommitting. I thought it was really good. And the same against Tigres in the quarterfinal. I mean, I didn't think they were... I thought Tigres, to be fair, played really well, but, you know, America got through. And that was after coming back from New Zealand. You know, 7 of the players had started in New Zealand, come back 3-4 days later, play the first leg of the quarterfinal, and they get that draw in Monterrey. I mean, that set them up for the whole playoffs. So for those reasons, I mean, I think Leon form team, America just have the nous. They've been there before. You know, they've come from behind like they did in the final last time round. So yeah, I mean, I see it really even. I think that's why it's going to be a really, really great final. I'm really looking forward to it.
Johnny, do you honestly, with every Americanista bone in your body, believe that Club America is vastly superior, that they are the favorites to win the title against León?
I wouldn't say vastly superior because, as Tom mentioned, León are stronger and have been playing quite better soccer. But the title never doesn't always go to the one that plays better soccer. We saw America kind of inch out Cruz Azul in last season's final, and I think Cruz Azul, you know, kind of held their own. They, America weren't vastly superior to Cruz Azul either, and they still walked away with the trophy. So I see, like Tom mentioned, I see a very smart America, very wise America that could inch out the, you know, more talented, more dynamic team that is León.
And Naive, as we move into this final, León obviously beating up on Santos Laguna. They did so against Morelia as well. América with a couple of closer score lines against Tigres and Toluca. Still, though, do you think that América's road to the final was tougher than León's, or would you not put that as a crutch for América to lean on?
I don't know. I think, Eric, you know, it's if you compare the matches, I mean, Morelia and then Santos, they were competitive opponents. And then also Toluca for América, Toluca, because towards the end of the season, it sort of got its groove going on. But the thing that's special about León, I think, comparing it to América right now, is its firepower on the attack with Mauro Boselli. Boselli has 14 goals right now. And you don't see that firepower from Raul Jimenez or Luis Gabriel Rey. And then when I see the team, León, and I see the players, you know, you have Gullit Peña, who's perhaps, you know, that all-terrain player that, you know, probably has his, could be the best, if León eventually probably wins this thing, could end as the best player of the season. And then you have Luis Montes, who's the most, you know, dynamic in the way, you know, scoring goals from outside the box and being all fancy with the ball on his feet as the most artistic player of the league. And, you know, more consistent than, for example, Sambuesa. I think both left-footed players. But I don't see that fact that, you know, if one team arrived more easily than the other, or the one had it more complicated than the other. I think the best two Liga MX teams this season are in the final, and I think that's gratifying for the spectator, that's gratifying for the game in Mexico, because it's two teams that play dynamic football the whole season, and playing a dynamic football with the 5-3-2 has them here in this stage of the year.
That's a good point, and you mentioned a couple of players on both teams that I really like. I think Montes, and I stand by what I said, knowing full well that Montes is also 28 years old. I think he's pretty overrated. You know, I think he's a very good player, but you immediately get these proclamations from the people who are in charge of the transmissions for León in Mexico and certain other analysts telling you that Montes should be playing in Europe. I don't think that Luis Montes is a guy at 28 years old, especially, and with his inconsistency and with his injuries, that he could be playing in Europe. But that's not to say he's not a bad, or rather, he's not a good player. I think he's a very good player still. You know, for León, I think the guy that really kind of makes them tick up front is Gullit Peña. You know, Carlos Peña is that really solid, consistent player in the middle of the field, has the ability to really create on offense, has the ability to stop people on defense. He reminds me a lot of Hector Herrera, who you mentioned at the top of the show you might be seeing tomorrow. And I think he's a player that can really kind of make a difference for León in this final, because that middle of the field for América is pretty good on defense. You know, Juan Carlos Medina is a fantastic defender. If they put Jesus Molina in there from the start, which I don't believe they'll do, they'll go with Osvaldo Martinez. Osvaldo Martinez is purely offensive, and so is Zambuesa. Can Juan Carlos Medina face two guys like Luis Montes and Carlos Peña in the middle of the pitch? I think that's going to be key for this final. But the real key, in my mind, is in the goalkeeper position. You know, I think William Yarbrough is a young goalkeeper who has a lot of potential, but he's made some pretty bad mistakes in these playoffs, you know, wouldn't you guys say?
Well, yeah, I think with Yarbrough, it's just, he's really good on his line at stopping shots and stuff. It's just decision-making coming out for crosses. I mean, yeah, like you said, he's a young keeper. He needs to learn, you know, his decision-making needs to improve, and I'm sure he will because he's got the talent. But, and Munoz, you know, against Toluca, he pulled off, what was it, I think in about the 70th minute, he pulled off like a really top quality save to keep America in it. I think it would be something definitely to look at. Then the other thing, going back to America and the Zambuesa and Oswaldo, I think, you know, Herrera he deserves a lot of credit for changing those two players and making them. You know, I used to watch Sam Wessel when he played for Tecos and stuff, and like the way Herrera makes him, you know, really work for the team and drop back, I think has been really impressive. And the same with Oswaldo. I remember when he used to play for Atlante, and he was very much a, you know, number 10 type of player, you know, didn't really do much tracking back. And, you know, both of them have been, you know, rejuvenated under Herrera. And I thought that against Toluca, I mean, this is the other side of Herrera. We talk about being, you know, a kind of student of La Volpe and stuff, and I think I think he's a bit more pragmatic, and I think the way we saw against Toluca, we saw in that first leg against Toluca, Brizuela absolutely rip apart America like he has done to a lot of teams over the last 12 months, and then we've seen Velasquez, the Paraguayan striker, you know, score a ridiculous amount of goals this season, and in that second leg. In that second leg in the Azteca last weekend, nothing. Neither of them had anything. Anytime Brizuela got the ball, two players on him. Valesquez just completely, just kind of smothered out the game. And I think we're going to see Herrera employ a similar tactic against Gullit Peña for the final. I think he's really going to try and get two players against him as much as possible, and he's going to be really careful for those dangerous bursting runs that he can make going forward, like he did for Leon second the other night. So, I think that's going to be interesting to see what Herrera does to counteract the Leon threat. But I think, going back to the keeper, I think they're definitely going to be working the set pieces like Herrera, you know, does. It's got that little short corner, like the near post corner flick onto Massa, which seems to do it all the time, but, you know, it works. And I think especially with the way the keeper is Yabra, I think he's I think America are going to play on that, and especially if they get some, if they get the chance to pump the ball in the box with, you know, Ray and Jimenez, who are both decent in the air, and you know you've got Mosquera and Mazar Rodriguez, you've got a lot of big players there in America. Something we don't talk about a lot, but it's also a powerful side. So you know I think they're definitely going to be playing that if they get a chance to pump the ball in.
Yep, that seems to be the way that they've been operating with set pieces, and I think it's really interesting that for a number of years, I think that's been kind of an Achilles heel of Mexican soccer in general, and we see it with the national team. There's not a lot of creativity when you get the opportunity on dead ball spots, and I think Miguel Herrera is a guy who has really kind of pushed towards that and tried to change the way that America approach that type of game plan, and I think he's going to do that with the national team as well. So it should be interesting to see for these last 180 minutes of the season, maybe more, what impact that has. Naib, we mentioned it earlier, and I think we're all in agreement, you know, these two teams are very even. And I mentioned the goalkeepers, Tom mentioned set pieces. What do you think is going to tip the balance either one way or another way for these two games?
You know, I think the difference will be on the benches. I think when you look at the issue that's going on right now, this special case with Mexico, Mexican football, you know, Piojo Herrera had almost a lot of... I mean, the starting lineup against New Zealand, it had León players and América players and Oribe Peralta. And I think, you know, as much as Piojo might say, well, you know, might sort of disregard the fact that he knows the how Gulli plays, how Luis Montes plays, how Rafa Márquez leads the team in a certain way, I think that's an advantage of Piojo Herrera, and he will be able to find ways to, you know, work that midfield out. I think, you know, the midfield is important because the players that we talk a lot about are Gulli, Peña, Luis Montes, Negrito Medina, Sambu, Osvaldo Martinez, and a possibility of putting Martinez from the start. And I think, you know, that's going to be the difference. Matosas doesn't have that advantage that Piojo has, that, you know, Matosas coach, you know, a player like Negrito Medina or a player like Martinez or something like that. And Piojo has that advantage. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, luckily, Mexican national team is in the World Cup, and it's due because of the protagonist that will be in these next two games. I would like to hear what Johnny thinks.
And I did hear that that debate come up somewhere. Who has more advantage, Piojo Herrera for coaching the three León players, or the three León players for kind of, you know, mingling in the América team? I tend to agree with Naib. You know, Piojo Herrera is a very, very smart and very strategical, and he's gotten a good look at what Montes and Peña and Rafa can do, and he's got a plan to nullify them.
Yeah,
especially in the first game in León. You know, he might be a little more aggressive in at the stick on the way, but one of the key factors for me is going to be the long range shots that León have. It seems like anybody can just have a shot from anywhere in the field. Munoz is going to have to, like, really be aware that a shot could come at any time.
Yeah, and yeah, just to correct a little bit what I said, I said Martinez, I meant putting Molina on the midfield.
Gallito Vasquez, man, and Burbano have gotten some really impressive goals in these playoff series because of what Johnny said. You know, they're long-range shot experts. I think that's something we can't discount, but I think ever since Memo Ochoa left, it hasn't really been that big of an issue for América to stop those shots. Memo had a lot of trouble with those long-range 30-yarders or whatever.
Ask Andrés Guardado on how many he scored on Memo.
Yeah, and I think that's the entire reason he's in Europe right now. They just scored those goals on Ochoa. Johnny mentioned the first game in León. There's a really interesting story there, and I think, you know, we're all obviously up to speed with what's going on. León in Mexico is put exclusively, is transmitted exclusively by Fox Sports. 18 months ago when León came up, they had the opportunity, or rather they had the, so you know, the obligation to sell their rights to TV Azteca, because that's the way that Televisa and TV Azteca distributed their TV rights. León, obviously, with a huge investment from Carlos Slim. Carlos Slim, a guy who's trying to enter the Mexican TV market and finding it very difficult, thanks to Televisa and Azteca, said, no, we're not going to sell the TV rights to TV Azteca. They moved to Fox Sports. And obviously, Fox Sports is a cable channel here in Mexico as well. A lot of pressure, guys, this week from Televisa to León, asking them to sell the rights to that game, the first match of the final to either Azteca or Televisa, so that, quote, all of Mexico can see it. Now, is this a kind of a, is this a noble request that Televisa is launching out there, or do you see it as self-serving? Do you see it as part of, as kind of a proxy for a bigger war? I mean, this is really controversial down here.
You know, I think I am a big Americanista, but I am not a Televisa fan. You know,
I don't think any of us are.
First game, because León has sold their rights to Fox Sports, like you mentioned, but they also sold their rights to Mediotiempo.com. There's a legal stream anyone in Mexico can pick up on Mediotiempo and watch the game.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, obviously, there's good people without, if you don't have internet.
Right. Well, I mean, I know, but I think that if you take a look at the last census data, it's really up to the point where I think more than 90% of Mexicans have consistent access to internet.
Yeah, and what I like about this issue right now with the TV rights and how Fox Sports has, you know, the game, I think it showcases Mexican football to the world. I mean, I was reading that the game will be shown in Netherlands and Italy and Korea and some countries in Africa. I mean, if the game is shown on Televisa and TV Azteca, the game will not be shown in somewhere in Egypt or somewhere in Morocco who likes football. I think that finding ways to showcase Mexican football to the world has to be one of the main things that this Liga Bancomer MX has to push. You know, I think if it stays like it is now, with, you know, some games shown on TV Azteca, some games shown on Televisa, you know, of course, it does affect the public viewership in Mexico. But I think if Mexico wants to export its brand to the world, the way to go is with games like how it will occur this Thursday.
Let's play devil's advocate, though, for a second. You know, I understand that this is a simple power play. You know, obviously, Carlos Slim and the rest of the Pachuca León group, headed by Jesús Martínez, we know that both of these teams share an ownership group. This is part of a bigger war. You know, this is part of politics. This is part of billionaires kind of fighting over small things that are part of a bigger war. Even then, let's play devil's advocate and say that León already sold its TV rights to Fox Sports. Right? They got a pretty good amount of money from Fox Sports. Wouldn't it be interesting if León goes up to the negotiating table with Televisa or TV Azteca and says, all right, we'll sell you the rights for this game, but you have to use the Fox Sports branding, and you're going to pay just a huge amount of money for the game, just that one game, so that you have an opportunity to sell ad space and make that money back, but basically just take them to the cleaners. Don't you think that would be more of a, you know, just a bigger slap in the face for Televisa and TV Azteca, who have been adamant about blocking out León highlights from their shows? And we had this very controversial thing last year where the Pachuca games, which are still on TV Azteca, The way that they were broadcasted, you got vertigo from watching the games because it was almost kind of a top-down view, and you couldn't see the ads on the end of the field, which is not to say you want to see the ads, but it was still just kind of a very weird angle. You know, all of this stuff has been going on for the last 18 months, but Leon, if they really kind of wanted to slap in the face, wouldn't you guys welcome that, to see them just kind of sell their rights for a ton of money?
Yeah, I mean, I think first thing, ideally, in an ideal world, everybody will be able to watch it, you know what I mean? But obviously, the deals are in place, and deals are in place in the US, deals are in place in England to watch TV, you know what I mean? And I mean, if you don't have Sky Sports in England, then, you know, you can't watch games, you know? My house, we don't have BT Sports, so I can't watch some games. It's not like, oh, there's suddenly a big game, so one of them can go up to the other and go, oh, go on then, let us show it. Yeah. You know, pretty sure in most countries it doesn't work like that. So, I don't know, I mean, yeah, like you said, Eric, it's just a, you know, Carlos Slim, who's obviously part of Grupo Pachuca, you know, he's been desperate for a long time to get into TV, which is a duopoly in Mexico, more or less. And then, you know, Televisa especially, and also TV Azteca, have been wanting to get into telecommunications, which is what Slim basically runs pretty much as a monopoly. So they're both trying to get into the other, you know, to the other's, you know, core business. And so they're both trying to shut each other out as much as possible. And you know, that's why Slim's coming to the football. So, you know, maybe in the next few years, we're going to see more of this. You know, this could be the first big game of many where we're seeing this battle. And, you know, like you're saying there about the negotiating, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because this could be the precedent of what we're going to see over the next few years in Mexico in terms of TV and the battle between the two big TV companies and Carlos Slim.
Yeah, Carlos Slim is a guy who I think, you know, the Liga MX acted swiftly to avoid him buying more teams, because I could definitely see a guy like Slim buying like eight teams and, you know, breaking off from the Liga MX, starting his own league or something, because he has that amount of money. You know, it's really no big deal for him to do that and then put all those games on his TV network over the internet or on Fox Sports and ESPN. I mean, that's something that I don't think should be overlooked. Let's move on, shall we? I think we've overlooked one important storyline from this León América title match, and that is Rafa Márquez. Rafa Márquez is 34 years old, going on 35. This is going to be his second final series in Mexico and his first in 14 years. Back in 1999, he was part of that very great, very young Atlas team who was one penalty kick away from beating Toluca. Who I'm very glad are out of the tournament, because I really dislike Jose Cardoso. but yeah, 14 years later, man, Rafa Márquez is back in a Liga MX title match. Do you guys see him as being, you know, he's been more of an emotional leader for the first couple of tournaments that he's been back in Mexico, but this season he really brought his level up. He's made a triumphant return back to the Mexican national team. How big of a factor is Rafa Márquez going to be in this game? In this series,
I mean, Leon's captain. I mean, I'd say that maybe his lack of pace would be a problem, but I don't see, you know, America's strike force of Reyes and Jimenez, you know, causing too much problems in terms of pace. You know, obviously, he brings that authority. I think players respect him. You know, I think more than anything with Márquez, more than, you know, it's just been a crazy year. You know, if somebody would have said after he left New York Red Bulls, you know, a little over a year ago, you know, nobody thought he'd kind of do anything. I mean, I think most people thought he'd might come back to Atlas, play for 6 months and then give it up. I think it has been, it's worth pointing out, just, well, for me anyway, I think it's been remarkable how he's turned it around. And, you know, because when he came back to Mexico first, the first few games were a bit rough. You know what I mean? He didn't exactly look like he was going to step up a level. And you know, he's not just leading Leon out, but he's, you know, leading Leon out in front of the new Mexico manager, who's also chosen, you know, Márquez to be the leader of the national team. I mean, it says a lot about, you know, what these managers or coaches and people who are actually inside the game in Mexican football think about Rafa Márquez, and, you know, just how much respect they've got for him. Where obviously I know in the US, absolutely everyone hates him, but, you know, I think within Mexico, is what he's achieved, the trophies he's won, I think he's just got a huge amount of respect, and he's earned it. I mean, I think it's been sensational what he's done in 2013.
Yeah, I think it will, certainly, whatever the outcome is, but I think it will benefit the Mexican national team for Rafa Márquez to be the captain of León, and if León wins the title. I think that sort of carries some type of optimistic flow in the career of Rafa Márquez. That's in the end of his career already, the tail end. And that sort of helps make him be more motivational. He'd be like, I came to León. There was a lot of critique when he came to León because they say, oh, well, it's not one of the big teams in Mexico and so forth. He's coming to provincia, quote unquote. He turned around a situation in León that was pretty scary. I mean, let's not forget last season how horrendous it was with Arrechea and Eric Castillo, the clashes in the dressing rooms. And he comes out, Rafa Márquez, this new season with, basically the same players, just with the addition of Boselli and Arizala, but, the Burbanos were there, the Loboas were there, the Montes, the Gulli. And it sort of restructured. It just took 6 months for him to get back into his, the top level. And now we're seeing excellent football from Rafa Márquez.
Not only excellent football, but again, I think his leadership can't be underestimated. And Johnny, Raúl Jiménez, 0 goals in the semifinal. He scored a goal against Tigres in the quarterfinals, Luis Gabriel Reyes scoring a spectacular goal in the semifinals, but he had been pretty quiet up until then. Most of America's scoring coming from their defenders. Aquivaldo Mosquera has a pair of goals. Juan Carlos Valenzuela, I believe, scored against Tigres. With Rafa back there, do you see an opportunity or do you see a hindrance for America strikers to take advantage?
I kind of mentioned this after the Tigres, after the quarterfinal matchups. I felt that the Mexican national team came and stole all of the América's rhythm. And, based on the intelligence of, mostly time management, kind of pressing when they're supposed to press, dropping back when they're supposed to drop back, they've made it to the final. But, I see that kind of like misfire in their forwards. But I think America are going to cause some trouble in the set pieces. The goalkeeper situation was mentioned. Rafa Márquez, he's picking up his form. But even at his best form, let's not forget all the problems that Mexico had in the 2006 World Cup, in the 2005 Confederations Cup, in set pieces. And we had Rafa Márquez at his best form then. And, the set pieces were still a problem for him. So I'm pretty confident that off of corner kicks and free kicks, Aquivaldo Mosquera, Maza Rodriguez, even Raúl Jiménez, who's a great header, is going to cause some trouble on that León goal.
But guys, final predictions before we move into the game on Thursday and then the game on Sunday. Who do you guys think is going to take the title?
I'm going to go for León, although I'm not. I said right at the start of the season, I really like León going forward. I think they're going to be the most exciting team. And, there was periods of the regular season where, they weren't necessarily. And I think now they're showing that again. And I think I'm going to stick with that. And, I said at the start of the playoffs, León, seen some weaknesses in America. I think Toluca were pretty poor in that second leg. I think they should have been slightly better. I mean, fair play to America for stifling them, but I just think León are gonna sneak it out. I don't think America are in form.
Naib?
I'll say America and penalty kicks.
After Munoz scores, scores an injury.
After Munoz gets it in. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Johnny?
America takes it in extra time, not penalty kicks.
I don't think that this is going to be the high-powered offensive match that we think it's going to be. I think They said the same about America Toluca. You know, Toluca had been just a steamroller on offense because Cardoso had been pushing his team forward over the regular season, and they have the top goal scorer in the league, Pablo Velazquez. They had great offensive minds and young talents such as Isaac Brizuela. They had Cigna. Just a fantastic offensive grouping. Esquivel kind of found his... I mean, that's not even his second win. I think it's like his fourth or fifth win. Just a great offensive team. They were only able to muster two goals at home. In the first game, they didn't look too dangerous in the second game. With that said, I think that if America can keep León, away from possession, that they're going to have a great chance to win. So I see this as being another tight Cruz Azul type final where America takes it. I'm going to say 2-1 over America. Two legs. Yeah, America's going to win it 2-1 over two legs, like a 1-1 in León and a 1-0 at the Azteca.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
I think that does it for Liga MX final preview. Yeah, I mean, America
title
wins.
Number 12.
if they get title number 12, that means that Chivas is now no longer, for the first time ever, I should note, since 1969, they wouldn't be the top winning team in Mexico. It would be America the first time that would happen.
Soto would really piss off Chivas and Pumas at the same time.
And Cruz Azul and Toluca and Morelia and everybody else in the league, which I think would be fantastic. Because, America are already the villains, but if they get that 12th title, I mean, it's just going to, all bets are off. Everybody's going to be gunning for them. So, 12 titles. Chivas is going to go down. They're going to stay at 11. What do you guys think is going to happen with Chivas? This offseason, they've made some, I guess, interesting signings with the loan deals for Julio Gomez, the U17 champ in 2011. But they've also made some really questionable signings like Israel Castro. What do you guys make of this?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating what's going on with Chivas at the minute, because especially in the context of America, overtaking them. I mean, you can't understate, it's a big thing. Chivas, of all the marketing that comes out of the club, is that they're the biggest, they're the most successful club ever in Mexico, blah, 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 playing with only Mexicans, you know what I mean? All of a sudden on Sunday, that they might have to take that down, you know what I mean? It is big. Israel Castro, yeah. I personally think he could do a job. Julio Gomez, I think it could be a decent risk, but at the end of the day, they need players in now, Chivas, who can do something and substantially lift the level. I mean, they finished 17 and 16 in 2013 in the two championships. We're not talking about a fluke, a team that's like just had a bad season, like León did last season. We're talking about a team that's consistently been poor and needs some big signings to lift them up. It's been absolutely fascinating watching the social networks, because I think we're seeing now, really, for the first time properly on a wide scale, fans really protesting the club, and they're using the Chivatón hashtag, which is based with Telatón, which is basically a charity. People ring in and give money, they donate money to help, to help Mexican charities and people who are, very unfortunate. So Chivas fans are actually, it's really tongue-in-cheek about, donating to the club so that they can buy new players. And, I mean, they want big names, They want players who can instantly, make an impact. The other thing is they missed out on Diego de Buen, who's moved to Pachuca, if I'm not mistaken. And they've also lost out on Edgar Andrade, who's gone to... Is it also Pachuca?
Yeah.
I mean, two, midfielders in the prime or very, very soon to be in the prime. Chivas have lost out on both. You've got, Tigres, Tuca Ferretti, saying that they're not going to sell Carlos Salcido for peanuts. I mean, it's common knowledge that Chivas want him. I mean, that's a direct insult to Chivas, saying, you're not offering us enough. All of Chivas's deals at the minute seem to be part exchanges or loans. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just fans are really, really getting annoyed for the first time. There's been a mass... They're trying to get a mass unfollow of the club's Twitter account going. Because the other thing that the club... I mean, they're just not the brightest in the PR department, but, they'll kind of You know, fans are really annoyed about the players that have come to the club over the off season. The club will send out a Facebook message on the weekend, I think on Saturday, saying, "Oh, you know, we've reached three million likes on Facebook. You know, oh, thanks very much." And then they're like, "You know, yeah, if you spend 5,000 pesos, which is what, like $400, which in Mexico is a hell of a lot of money. You know what I mean? It's like probably just a bit below the average wage for a month for somebody. Then they'll give them a few free T-shirt. Like, it's just a joke. You know what I mean? Just kind of they've not got the finger on the pulse of what the fan is thinking, and you know, and I think if America win, I think we're going to see repercussions over achievers. I think that there's going to be a substantial protest campaign against the owners because people are now absolutely sick. Yeah, so
going on for achievers.
I'm happy.
Wouldn't that be the best thing to happen to Chivas, though, in a weird way?
I mean, they need to sort it out. I mean, I think the overriding question with Chivas, the fundamental kind of, you know, the overriding question that goes on at that club at the minute, and that fans need to ask, the media needs to ask, and, you know, that actually produces fascinating answers, is whether Chivas can do it with Jorge Vergara as the owner. You know what I mean? And I think fans are split on that. So you'll find some fans that say, yeah, you know what, if he does put money in, he's done well with the youth system, he's built the stadium. And you get others that say, you know what, he doesn't have a clue. You know what I mean? We're never going to be successful with him. And I think that's the wider question when it comes to Chivas. But, I actually think it's good that the fans are protesting it.
I mean, it's tough also for Chivas.
Gives me something to write about.
It's tough for Chivas, too, because I think the times are changing a lot in the sense that, you know, back in the day, it was fashionable if you were a good Mexican player to sign for Chivas. Now the Mexican player can say, well, I can go to Europe, maybe. Or there's other big teams in the north of Mexico like Monterrey, Tigres, Santos that have a lot of money. And they can put the money there.
They can go to Pachuca or León, man.
Or also that, Eric. But, you know, like, for example, per se, Gullit Peña right now.
Yeah.
For Gullit Peña, it's not fashionable to go to Chivas, considering the situation that Chivas has in the last 2 years.
No, definitely. I mean, look at Carlos Peña. First of all, he's clearly good enough to go to Europe. Secondly, is it a club, León, that are fighting for the title this year, likely to be fighting for the title next year, in the Copa Libertadores next year, where all the European scouts are watching? You know, he's got a World Cup coming up, so why would he risk going to Chivas, you know what I mean? Unless they're going to double his money, which they're not. I mean, it all comes down to money at the end of the day. I mean, if Vergara goes out and buys a couple of big players, like talking like Aldo de Nigris-type signings, all of a sudden players will want to come, you know what I mean? I think that can be turned around.
Yeah.
But at the minute, it's going the other way. I mean, you know, Chivas' net talent that they're going to have lost so far. I mean, just the loss of Marco Fabián in terms of a player who could really do something great for the club. You know, that loss is massive. I mean, you know, he's not done it. I mean, so you can't really blame the club for it. But I mean, you know, is that as Chivas move forward this off season? You know, I don't think so. You know what I mean?
Is there something that Chivas can do other than buy players for the next 6 months? Because I think we've ignored the fact that they are in relegation trouble as well. That can't really just be brushed off. You know, we've seen teams fall from further. I don't think Chivas is going to go into the ascenso, but rather this season. But if they have another mediocre season and they start next year at 16th or 17th or 15th in the relegation table, what's that going to do to Chivas' fan base, which we've seen already just abandon the team?
Abandon the team. I think more than that, I think we are starting to see now people, like fans, actually protesting. And I think, to be honest, I think it's been a long time coming, because I think at other clubs, you know, this would have been, there'd have been people out on the streets, outside the games, stuff like that. You know, really protesting. We saw it with the banners, some of which were pretty disgusting with the death threats, but seeing it online now, you know, fans are, you know, unsubscribing from the Chivas Twitter account. And I think we're going to see more and more as that, as it, unless they improve. I mean, it is pretty embarrassing at the minute, the club. I mean, it's just, I don't know, there's just nowhere to look. And the fact that America in this big final on Sunday, you know, and playing in front of, 90,000 people in the Azteca, 100,000, and, going for not just number 12, but, the back-to-back titles, which, hardly anybody ever gets, you know what I mean? Only, it just rubs it all in so much more. And, and especially when Vergara look at the amount of money that he gets from kind of, TV contracts in the US and stuff. I mean, Chivas get a lot of money from those kind of things. And fans are just like, well, where's the money going? Because at the end of the day, I don't know. I mean, my theory, I know we've been going on it for a bit now, is that Vergara is not stupid. And every time he goes on TV, every time he goes on, any interview, anytime basically Chivas are mentioned these days, it's linking it with his company, OmniLife. It's basically free promotion. You go to any Mexican and you say, OmniLife, Vergara, Chivas, they're all interlinked. Whereas if you say, some of the competitors, they're not going to be so well known. So I think he's done a great job. I mean, his company is just now, a nationwide, everybody knows that name. And I think that, whereas Chivas have suffered on the field, I think as a brand and as Vergara, as a businessman, has probably, stepped up a notch. Because of the publicity he's got from it.
Yeah, I think I think now more than ever you're saying that Vergara kind of views Chivas as a secondary business. And it's not really kind of fulfilling what he thought the experience was going to be when he bought it in 2002. And he made all these grandiose promises. Chivas under Vergara the last 11 years, one title. Ironically, in the last 11 years, America has won three titles. They're going for their fourth this weekend. Cruz Azul, zero titles. And Pumas, I believe, also have four titles since 2002. So Chivas and Cruz Azul, the worst for wear in that particular time period. Tom, we're going to let you go. Apparently, you've got a lot of British stuff to do out there, so we're going to just finish the show.
It's tough.
So that's Tom Marshall. You can follow him. You already follow him, but if you don't, it's at Mexico World Cup. You can find Tom's writings on our Twitter page, which is at Mex Soccer Show. You can find us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/Mex Soccer Show. We're going to move on and we're going to talk a little bit about the situation that is going on with Mexico. The final draw for Brazil 2014 has been fulfilled. We now know that Mexico are going to face Brazil, they're going to face Cameroon, and they're going to face Croatia. So this is a very interesting group, I think, because outside of the obvious hurdle of playing against Brazil, Mexico has a pretty good opportunity to go through if they handle their business against Cameroon and Croatia. Initial thoughts on the draw for Mexico, guys. Do you think this is a good draw for them or a bad draw?
I think in general, looking at how the situation turned out in 2013 and the deplorable, happenings with the team and CONCACAF play, you look at Cameroon, you think of Samuel Eto'o. And you see Alexander Song gets minutes in Barca, but it's not that much. I mean, in the last World Cup in 2010, Cameroon finished second to last, just in front of North Korea. And all the goals scored by Cameroon were Samuel Eto'o. The thing, though, with that disadvantage is that Mexico placed Cameroon first. And I think that's really, really important for Piojo in planning a perfect game. Because let us remind the audience that in 2006, with Ricardo La Volpe, they played Angola and they tied 0-0. In 2010, they had to open the World Cup in South Africa and they had to tie a 1-1. They were down 1-0 with that goal from Shabalala. And I think, it's planning the game adequately. And then Brazil comes in the second game. And Brazil, we know what Brazil has with Neymar and this new idea that Felipao has given to this team, being more physical, more tactical, less artsy. There's not that much jogo bonito with this Brazil and Felipao. And then Croatia. I think Croatia is going to be the third game. We don't know how many games Mandzukic, the forward from Bayern Munich, is suspended. But if he suspended one or two games, he will be available for that third game. And depending on the situations and the scores with Brazil, it could be a determinant game, because it could be a must-win for El Tri, or it could be a must-win for Croatia as well. And with Croatia, I think I will follow Jorge Valdano's words. He said that Croatia is a South American national team in Europe. And it is that because it has midfielders like Luka Modric and like Ivan Rakitic, who like to play the ball on in the midfield, like those first touches, not that much of vertical play. And I think that's how it looks right now. And what helps El Tri right now is that no one knows in the world how Piojo Herrera's Tri will play. Because, yes, we can use New Zealand game as an example, but New Zealand is not the parameter that we want to sort of measure how good this Tri will be.
What about you, Johnny? I mean, we're looking at, and again, Naib just did an excellent job breaking down Cameroon and Croatia. Croatia with a good amount of well-known players, including Modric. Cameroon as well, having Samuel Eto'o, having players who have been available to that national team who have had the brunt of their careers in top-level European leagues. But there is an elephant in the room, and that is Brazil. Given Mexico's recent history against Brazil, despite the fact that they're at home, how do you see that game playing out?
You know, the biggest thing, the biggest problem Mexico's going to face against Brazil is that Brazil now take Mexico seriously. You know, that used to not be the case, and Mexico could get by Brazil, beating Brazil in Copa America, beating Brazil in Confederations Cup to win its only FIFA title, to win the Olympic gold medal, to win the U17 World Cup. But we saw Brazil take Mexico seriously in this last summer's Confederations Cup, and it didn't turn out so well for Mexico. You know, Naib kind of brought up a good point that nobody really knows what Piojo Herrera is going to play like, or even what players he's going to use, because, you know, he opted not to make the European players travel all the way to New Zealand, but with time to prepare for the World Cup, I'm sure he's going to incorporate some of the European-based players. And, you know, Mexico's a big mystery to everyone at this point. So, I don't know. I think a draw, I can see both Brazil and Mexico ending the group with 7 points.
I don't know. You know, I think Brazil, I would see a more likely scenario with Mexico with 5 points or 6 points. 5 points, of course, would mean that they would get two draws, which would kind of support your hypothesis, Johnny. And I don't see that as being kind of off the mark completely, knowing full well how well Mexico have played against Brazil. Not only that, they've been fantastic against tough rivals in big competitions, such as the Confederations Cup and the World Cup, and we've seen it more recently now with the under 23, 20, and 17 teams at their respective World Cups or at the Olympics. You know, they've had a lot of really great opportunities to develop talent and to play against the top teams in the world, and they've had, you know, varying results. I think it's interesting that Mexico have played so well against Brazil, but they've just been at the mercy of Argentina at this level. Is that going to be a factor for Mexico going in? I think the most important thing is something that you already mentioned, which is the mystery factor for Mexico. Nobody really knows what Mexico is going to do. I think a lot of, you know, they expect Chicharito to be there. They expect Giovanni Dos Santos to be there. They expect most of the European-based players to find their way back into the Mexican national team squad. But now with this Club America base, all bets are off, I would say. And the team is really adopting that style of play. I think everybody's been used to watching Mexico with a 4-4-2 or a 4-5-1. Now it's going to be a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2, depending on how you want to look at it. If, you know, and again, if I'm going to bet on that game, even though we're 6-7 months away and several things can happen, injuries, freak drops of play, whatever,
Ronaldinho call up for Brazil.
I see him there though. I definitely see him there.
And that would change the style of play for Brazil. I think if Ronaldinho plays, then you do have that jogo bonito that we're talking that is missing right now, and that would change radically how to prepare for that game, because the team that played in the Confederations that beat Spain 3-0 in the final did not have a player like Ronaldinho. You can say that Oscar is that next Ronaldinho, but Oscar is more, you know, more molded into that type of European number 10 sort of feel, that, you know, he's defensive, he can shoot from outside, you know, doesn't have that much magic on his boots, but he's consistent, he's a starter in Chelsea. But, you know, it changes a lot if Ronaldinho plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I mean, I'm going to bet that Mexico still, no matter who's playing for both teams, I think the fact that Brazil's at home and being there in Brazil this year for the Confederation Cup and seeing how the people supported the team and how they completely got behind them. And I was there for that Brazil-Mexico game, and it was just a fantastic atmosphere. So I'm going to say that Brazil wins that game against Mexico. I say Brazil is going to finish that group with 9 points off the top of my head. And I'm going to say that Mexico gets past with either 6 or 4, you know, and just kind of a repeat of 2010. And that potentially puts you in a world of danger, because what happens then is you're most likely going to face Spain in the round of 16. Well, so that's
even if Mexico qualifies first place, Holland is not that exciting of a opposition next round.
Anyway. Oh yeah, and you could have that happen too. You could potentially have a Brazil Spain in the round of 16, and you could have Mexico playing Holland, which would be kind of those two round of 16 games. I more so Brazil and Spain, Brazil versus Spain, obviously, if that would happen. But Mexico against Holland, I mean, I'm thinking that would be a hell of a game as well.
Yeah, guys, and let's not disregard Chile. I think Chile with Vidal in the midfield. Vidal is Juventus' best player right now in Italy, and perhaps one of the best midfielders in Europe right now. And then Alexis Sanchez and then Vargas, you know, with the new coach there that took over, I don't know, Sampaoli. You know, it's sort of a version of Bielsa again, but more, you know, more different, more like Cholo Simeone. You know, in Spain, they're really scared about Chile. So, I mean, would not be surprised if it could be Mexico-Chile in the round of 16, which would be beneficial for Mexico, I think, because the styles of play are more similar.
I agree. But still, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the CONCACAF countries and the way that their groups were sorted out. So that's, you know, apparently that's really funny to Johnny. But
thank you so much, USA, for letting us have the gift of life in the World Cup qualifications. We appreciate it.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. They face Ghana again for, I think it's, what, the third World Cup in a row?
Yes, in their group. Somewhere in that area.
Okay, so they face Ghana. Ghana has been so tough on the U.S. They just cannot figure them out. They face Germany, which is going to be just a hugely interesting match, just because they get to face Yogi Löw, who was Jurgen Klinsmann's assistant back in the 2006 World Cup. And they are also, I mean, just with those two teams there, they also face, correct me if I'm wrong, is it England?
Portugal.
That's Portugal. Yeah, you're right. It's Portugal. So, yeah, there's this one guy, Cristiano Ronaldo, who can pretty much swing a game in Portugal's favor, as we saw against Sweden.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, not a bad guy. I think he's probably like the best or the second best or the third best player in the world, depending on who you're talking to. But, yeah. Just a brutal group for the USA. Do you guys see them getting out of that?
No. You know, I think Ghana is going to be their quote-unquote easiest game. And like you said, they've really struggled against Ghana. I can definitely see Ghana, you know, once again defeating the U.S. I definitely see Portugal beating the U.S. And, you know, some might think that because it's Jurgen Klinsmann on the bench, the U.S. might have a shot against Germany. I mean, it's Germany. It's the three-time World Cup champion Germany. It's the powerhouse Germany. There's no way you can't put Germany on 9 points in this group.
Yeah, there are a lot of notes, I think, you know, thinking quick right now, out of my mind, you know, with the U.S. and its friendlies that it's played against, you know, top teams, you know they played against
Boston.
It's
so weird, though. They're so weird, aren't they, Naive? Yeah. They'll play a team like Germany, but you mentioned it. It was Germany C.
Yeah.
They beat them. They beat up on them. But then they'll play Belgium.
Belgium with all this player, and they got crushed. And then I think, if I recall correctly, the game in Bosnia, Herzegovina, you know, the first half, Bosnia dominated, and that was with its best team. And I think Bosnia in the second half, it switches players. And that's when the U.S. got a little bit good with Altidore. You know, Altidore moving to England, you know, that's played against him, I think. And I think that's something that should be worrying Klinsmann, because he doesn't have that killer striker like it did during part of the hexagonal. You know, when I see Portugal, the U.S., you know, I think the U.S. has good midfielders. And when I think about Michael Bradley and I think about Graham Soucy, you know, Portugal has Cristiano Ronaldo. But I think, you know, the midfielders between Portugal and the U.S., they're pretty equal. You know, they have João Moutinho and Veloso there in Portugal, but you know it's not that much. I mean, the difference maker, of course, is Cristiano, and Cristiano, when he's on, you know, on a mission like he was against Sweden, I mean, he's unstoppable. And I don't think a Bessler or Omar Gonzalez, center backs are able to stop him. And that's where it gets complicated for the U.S. A miracle.
Naive, okay. I don't know. I have doubts on the U.S.'s midfield. I mean, it seems like Jurgen Klinsmann is giving all of the creativity responsibility to Michael Bradley, but Michael Bradley is clearly not a creative midfielder. He's a workhorse. He's a box-to-box, you know, midfielder. And yeah, he can put in a killer pass every now and then, but I think it's very unfair to unload all of the creativity responsibility on a guy like Bradley.
Yeah, and I think there, Johnny, well, it's a little mixed because, you know, you got a player like Dempsey and Donovan, you know, that could, you know, you always want to have a Bradley in your team. And I'm not saying straight up like, you know, Bradley's the director of the offense. But I think in the sense of, you know, what he does in Roma, you know, he picks the ball and passes it out to the Strootman. You know, I think that is where Bradley is strong, and he's even scored goals, you know, on set pieces and so forth. But then, of course, that debate of if Donovan will play as a starter, considering now that, you know, there's this break in the MLS, like it always happens, you know, that sort of hurts the player.
Might come to Atlas, they say. So we'll see. Group G, definitely a group of death candidate. Let's talk about the other group of death candidate, which also has a CONCACAF team, and that's Group D, Costa Rica, with Uruguay, England, and Italy. So, I mean, yeah, that's a brutal draw for Costa Rica, and I would say that they have no chance, but the World Cup is weird, you know? You get three games to do things.
Yeah, and and they're also stressing a lot the climate changes. I mean, England playing in Amazonic, you know, climate, you know, it's an advantage for Costa Rica. You know, I Costa Rica has good players. You know, right now, this guy in Everton, Oviedo, scoring goals and playing great at right back or left back, if I'm not mistaken, one of those two. You know, and then, of course, the striker they have in Fulham right now, his name doesn't come to mind. He played in Netherlands too. Brian Ruiz, yes, Johnny. You know, I think that's where, if Costa Rica has a chance of tying or doing the surprise, is because of the climate changes. For Italy and England and Uruguay, well, Uruguay would be advantageous, but England and Italy, you know, Italy, Prandelli was the guy with the idea of having that timeout and for drinking water, because he noticed in the confederations that his players were getting beat up by the heat. So I think, you know, that's where Costa Rica has an advantage.
You know, yeah. Costa Rica only has to go up against 7 World Cup champions.
Yeah, Italy, Uruguay, and England, all World Cup champs.
Yes, you know, 7 titles between them. So, I honestly think that group, Italy finishes first, and England and Uruguay fight it out for that second spot. I don't know.
I like Uruguay. I still like Uruguay. I think that they have their offense can never be overlooked. I think their defense has gotten older. But still, you know, even with players like Diego Lugano getting up into his 30s, they still have Sebastián Coates, and they still have those top offensive players in Luis Suarez and Edinson Cavani. I think even Diego Forlán might get a last run at the World Cup, and he's been fantastic with Uruguay. So, I think England is kind of that odd team out if you're talking about those big three. And I think if Costa Rica can beat England, and they have a real shot of making that round of 16 if they can coax a draw out of somebody else, you know? So I don't know. I wouldn't say it's all said and done for Costa Rica, but they're definitely not the favorites. Group E is where we'll end our tour of CONCACAF, and I think Honduras arguably got the best draw, you know? Switzerland was the weakest seeded team out of the top 8. They're grouped in with them. Ecuador, unfortunately, has not been the same since Cristian Benitez died. And France needed a huge game in Paris just to get into the World Cup. So, again, just a group of kind of iffy teams with Honduras who have shown a lot of toughness last year, making it to the quarterfinals of the Olympic Games. They have a great coach, in my opinion. And despite the fact that they do not have a lot of big-name stars on their team, just a very solid unit of players, do you see Honduras getting through to the round of 16?
Yeah, I like their chances. I mean, I think it's definitely going to be France in first place, and it's, you know, really all up for grabs between Switzerland, Ecuador, and Honduras. I mean, I think there's no clear favorites. In my personal opinion, I think it'll end up being Ecuador. I think they have slightly more talent than Honduras, but, you know, I can't say for sure. I definitely cannot rule out Honduras. Honduras has, like you said, a lot of heart. They play a lot of, as a unit, that coach has been in Honduras for a long time now, and he's definitely built a big, group atmosphere, almost like if it was a club.
Yeah, I think if we sort of look back at the Olympics and in London and what Honduras did, you know, against Spain, you know, beating Spain actually in that tournament, and then also, you know, taking down to the wire a Brazilian team with, you know, that finished with a silver medal, you know, you do get a sense. But the question with the striker though, Jerry Bengston, sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. That's they got a player like Roger Espinosa in the midfield that, you know, has more than 2 lungs. It's always all over the place. But it's complicated because Switzerland, you know, it's surprising that it was, you know, one of the top seeded teams in the draw. And the main reason it was a top seeded team was because it won friendly matches against Brazil. And that gets you a lot of points, supposedly, with FIFA rankings and everything. And Switzerland's base, you know, is basically a U21 team that was second place a year ago. And I think the champion was Spain in that tournament. So, I mean, it's a young Switzerland team with talented players. One of them is in Bayern Munich, Shaqiri, I think is his name. So I think, you know, it's tough for Honduras too because Ecuador, they qualified to the World Cup in CONMEBOL region. I mean, if you get out of CONMEBOL region, it means that you're good, you know, and not having to play a playoff, you know, and even with the unfortunate events that occurred surrounding the team with Cristian Benitez and so forth, they managed to stay put, you know, and follow a line. And, you know, there could be a player like Felipe Caicedo coming to Mexico, getting important minutes before the big event, you know, rumored to different Liga Bancomer MX teams. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that group. But it's tough for Honduras to get out.
I would still say that they have probably, outside of Mexico, the best shot of making the round of 16. You know, and again, you know, the United States has been very, very consistent over the last 3 years since Klinsmann took over after that 2011 World Cup, Gold Cup. But they arguably got the toughest draw alongside with Costa Rica. Sometimes, you know, that's where your World Cup begins and ends, with the draw. And I think last World Cup, Mexico saw a very difficult group in its midst, with South Africa being the host, and at that point, no host had ever been knocked out of the first round. Then you also had France, which looked very strong after being the 2006 runners-up. And then you also had Uruguay, which is always a strong team in the World Cup. Just every single time that they make it, they're strong. Mexico got out of that group. So, again, you know, the United States, I wouldn't put it past them to make it into the round of 16, because they have a lot of quality and a lot of consistency, which should not be overlooked. Costa Rica is definitely kind of a tougher situation, I would say. And Honduras, I mean, man, they're going to have to get some consistency going, which they have had in their defense over the last year or so. But I don't know. I don't think that you can expect much out of teams who have not been there in the past that many times and have dealt with the pressure of being in the World Cup. We've seen it chew up a lot of teams in the past, and then there's that that added element of luck that is always present and always seemingly against Mexico when they get into the round of 16.
It's the little events also, Eric, because, for example, in the 2010 World Cup, no one saw coming that sort of breakup of the French national team, you know, and players calling up on the coach and so forth. It was a tempest that was looking to be possible, but it erupted in South Africa. You know, little details like that can change the whole dynamic of the group stage.
I agree. So if there's anything else that you guys want to add, I think that now's the time. We're just going to close out the show. Ran a little long today,
yeah.
But still.
Just a question from Jaime to the Mexican Soccer Show account about Ulises Dávila and his chances to make the national team. You know, Ulises Dávila, he's scoring goals in Córdoba in second division. He's 22 years old. He's a Chelsea player and loan in Córdoba. I don't see Ulises in the World Cup, because there are players right now, like we mentioned a lot, the name Luis Montes. In his position, you know, and Luis Montes is 28. He's in his cusp of his career. Not the case with Ulises Dávila. Ulises Dávila will get a lot of prominence if he leads Córdoba to a first division, you know, berth with this Andalusian club. So, I mean, we'll see how it happens. But Ulises Dávila, I don't see him in the World Cup. What do you guys think?
No, I don't see him. I would say that... he doesn't have a very good chance, given his track record and the fact that he doesn't have first division football under his belt. Played for Chivas, I would say 2-3 years ago before moving to Europe, but hasn't been there long enough and consistently enough to be considered. So Dávila is a guy that I wouldn't, you know, none of those players from the 2011 under-20 World Cup have really developed the way that we thought they would. I do believe Hector Herrera was part of that team, so he might be an exception, as well as Diego Reyes.
Reyes was definitely there.
Diego Reyes was there as well.
Chaton, you know, that's...
No, he's tailed off, for sure.
Tailed off. Well, hoping he comes back, because he was one of the top five players in that tournament. So, you know, it's... And then Edson Rivera had his stint in Portugal with Sporting Braga, but then he got homesick, I guess, and he came back to Atlas. But, you know, the team hasn't had that much. I can say maybe with Ibáñez and Santos, you know, they're playing as a starter, right back. You know, but not that much notes come to mind. And then, of course, Hugo Torres going to Chivas USA.
Well, he's done a little bit better for himself, but I'd say that he's way far off from where we thought he was going to be, because he started off really well for Chivas. at the league level, and then he just tailed off. So, yeah, a lot of U-20 guys kind of in the midst there who still have a chance to build their careers. They're still very young, still 21, 22 years old. So we'll see what happens with them. Any other questions that we have from Twitter or Facebook there, Naeem?
No, I think that was one that, you know, certainly came out of the blue, basically. I mean, we'll see what occurs with the next month with El Tri. I think once, you know, Christmas goes on, then Reyes Magos, and then I guess that's when Piojo starts his road to Brazil.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. So we'll definitely see you guys. You'll hear us, rather, next week. We'll move towards the Christmas break. So here's hoping that you guys are getting closer to your Christmas vacation. Lots of family time, lots of food, lots of, hopefully not lots of drinking. We don't want to encourage that, I would say. But, yeah.
Not until we're sponsored.
Not until they sponsor us, right. Yeah, so no drinking any specific brand of beer until we get money from you jackasses. thank you so much for listening. We'll close this out with our individual Twitter accounts as we usually do. For Tom Marshall, who's had to leave the building earlier than usual, at Mexico World Cup. For Johnny Rico, at Johnny_soccerly. For Naeem Moran, at Naeem Moran. For Eric Gomez, at Goal Eric. You can follow our show's Twitter account at Mex Soccer Show. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/Mex Soccer Show. Send us your questions. Mexican Soccer Show. Facebook.com/Mexican Soccer Show. And send us your questions. Send us your comments. We're going to set up an email account if we haven't already as well. So, and if you want to come on the show, we're definitely open to having you guys on. All you need is a Skype account. All you need is a Skype account, and we can get you on the show to talk about Mexican soccer. So definitely drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook if you want that to happen. Thank you so much for listening, as always. For Naeem Moran, Johnny Rico, and Tom Marshall, my name is Eric Gomez. We will see you next week.